Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, Will Ainsworth for governor. Also, the wrong maps used at redistricting hearing. And more trouble at the Alabama Cannabis Commission. Where do we go from here?
Go down Beechwood and drive a while, and then you're gonna turn right, okay? And then you go and you keep driving and you keep driving.
Ah, a wrong turn in Stonerland. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and as always, I'm joined by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Boone, investigative reporter and columnist at APR. Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Josh, you look sunlit today. Are we at the beach?
I am. We have made our annual pilgrimage down to the beach, and so we're down. I'm down here looking for. I'm in Florida. I'm looking for Tommy Tuberville.
Well, if he's anywhere, he's there.
Yes.
But anyway, there you go. Hey, you know, redistricting is a serious business, and the U.S. Supreme Court, in a really surprising ruling, found that Alabama had violated the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And they have to redraw districts so that we have two opportunity zones where black Alabamians have a chance of winning two of our congressional seats, mm-hmm. two out of the seven. So they had their first public hearing, and y'all are going to be shocked. I know you know the answer to this, but you're going to be shocked to find out that the Republicans in charge of the meeting displayed a map and called it a singleton map, singleton plaintiff map, which would have been a Democrat map or a black map.
After Bobby Singleton.
They used that map during the whole hearing and called it unconstitutional. And guess what? It was, because it was never meant to be the map they used. It was a map that was filed to show how bad Alabama was drawing maps. Anybody want to pick that up?
Yeah. just an innocent mistake, man. Just it could happen to anybody. This process, I was hopeful that folks in Alabama would have taken what the Supreme Court said. The fact that it was this Supreme Court of all Supreme Courts, right. And said, you know, okay, listen, maybe we have gone a bit too far here. Maybe we have sought to disenfranchise black voters by the way we have continued to limit black voters and pack them into one congressional district and minimize the chances of black voters being able to elect a candidate of their choosing. And that's what the Supreme Court has asked them to do. But this process so far has shown that they are not going to take that tact on this. You know, from the refusal to nominate a black co-chair of the committee to now this mistake, of choosing this map, you know, to demonstrate these things. It's kind of reached the point of absurdity. But, honestly, I think it kind of goes back to what Chris England has predicted out of this. And that's that we're not going to get anywhere with this process. They're going to end up with a special master appointed by the court that's going to draw these maps for us.
Susan, we've seen this time and again. And what I'm going to do is quote a Republican friend of ours who said they drew those maps with an arrogance, believing that a right-leaning court, a far-right-leaning court, mm-hmm. by the way, would say, oh, well, you can racially gerrymander all you want to, and we won't care.
But the court said, and it's Robert's court, said no. no, this is too far, which just shocked me, honestly. But I'm really not surprised that they are taking
shocked them too. I think, yeah.
I'm really not surprised that they're taking this with the arrogance. That's the arrogance that they took when they drew the maps to start with. Now we've got this fake map, and they're just. And as Josh said, we're going to end it with a special master, which I think is actually the best thing.
It's probably going to be the best outcome all the way around, because they're going to draw it based on numbers and not on partisan politics.
Right.
Which would be great if we could draw all maps that way.
Yeah, wouldn't it, though? And that's exactly what I was about to say. You know, I don't want a map that leans to Democrats or a map that leans to Republicans. I would honestly, this would be a great opportunity for the people of Alabama to say, we don't want this process. We don't want this process anymore. We don't want to do this. We don't want to waste money on lawyers and attorneys and stuff. What we want is a permanent commission. That we can all agree on, a group of people that come together with clear guidelines on how they should draw maps fairly for all districts in this state, and let the chips fall where they may. If everybody wants to vote Republicans and we end up with a supermajority of Republicans, okay, I'm fine with that, as long as the maps are fair. But I think we can all look around right now, and we know these maps are not fair.
No, they're not fair. They're not fair at all.
But here's the thing. The thing is, it's not a hot topic. So people aren't interested.
Yeah.
To most people, this is a boring topic.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear about it. They don't understand it. And the supermajority is taking advantage of that, like they do in other states as well.
What?
Because people don't really, it's not the latest fashion of a topic.
Right.
It's old, it smells dusty, you know, so they just don't pay attention.
And I want to move on from there to say that Governor Ivey has called this a very important session, has asked that they take it seriously. But there's some folks that want to bring forward some nonsense bills, some of these hot button issues that Susan talked about, like defunding or taking money away from archives and history, because they had a luncheon that talked about gay history in Alabama. It was an hour-long luncheon, not even paid for with state dollars, paid for with federal grant money. And want to bring that in to just hype people up. And also they want to bring in this thing on ballot harvesting, which is really what they're trying to do, is discourage older voters from voting, people that are disabled or in nursing homes. They don't want them voting. But Josh, I think that this will not go anywhere. I think that Speaker Ledbetter and President Pro Tem Reid will strike it down and not let them do this nonsense.
Well, I hope so. I hope that's the case. You know, I would point out that a lot, well, not a lot, almost all of our hateful legislation that is put forth comes from some level of self-loathing by the people who put it forth. And so maybe there's time for a lot of people to look at why such bills are being brought out and why people have this fear, if you tell me that there is a luncheon taking place to examine the history of gay people in Alabama, okay. You know, I mean, it's totally something that doesn't, I'm not a gay person. I support people to live and adults to live and choose how to live, how they want to live, as long as everything is legal and all that. And I want everybody to have the same rights that I enjoy. And I don't understand why it's such a bother to some people. And, you know, maybe it's time we start asking those people a little bit more pointed questions about what's going on in their lives that has made this such a cause of concern for them.
Well, and they had the same event last year and not a peep. But we're going to have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
Today, Montgomery is a safer city. It's time to shift the narrative and take control of our future. We're reopening community centers, remediating blight, and revitalizing neighborhoods across the city. And we're unleashing new opportunities. Over the past year, companies have invested a record-setting $2 billion in Montgomery and created 2,000 jobs. This is a new Montgomery. And together, we're reimagining the possibilities.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Josh, you've written about it. I've written about it. You've written about it extensively with a new article that you had that came out on Thursday. the medical cannabis commission, the way they handled it, the licensing, has just turned into a nightmare for the commission, for the people who wanted license, for the state. And we're going to spend millions of dollars defending this process if we don't get it fixed quickly. You want to give us a brief overview of how messed up it's been?
If you can,
yeah, it's all
it
messed up,
a,
Bill.
Yeah,
it's all messed up. That's all about all you can say, really. It's it started out messed up with the portal that were plagued with issues that people could not upload their documents to the portal. They couldn't get the thing to work. It was taking them hours to get things through the portal. They had a 10 megabyte limitation on files attachments to this that really messed up a lot of people. And I mean, it has been that portion was a nightmare. Then, as we all know now, the grading portion of applications, which was at the very tail end of this thing, was also screwed up, admittedly, with inconsistencies in the grading process that occurred there. It has just been a mess, honestly. It's been an absolute mess of a process. And, you know, as is often the case with these things, there's no one person to put the blame on, and there's no real nefarious action that took place. There's just a lot of different screw-ups that happened, and they all kind of combined into this big ball of screw-up that rolled over the top of everybody and has tainted the entire process.
Well, it looks like they're going to make adjustments and a redo or a do-over to try to fix it. One thing I do want to point out there, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, success and failure are things we look at in government all the time. And we do try to point blame. One thing I would say is I do not think that John McMillan, the commissioner, who we've known for a long, long time, has been in politics for a long time, has been in administration for a long time. I do not think we can point the finger directly at him. I think he has surrounded himself with people that maybe lack the talent to have carried off such a large undertaking, and that the legislature hamstrung them from the very beginning.
Well, it did. You know, honestly, time and time again, they hamstrung them from a financial standpoint. They didn't think through that this is actually going to cost money. Look, and perfect thing with the state, as it always does business, let's do it on the cheap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do it on the cheap. Let's not give them any money to actually hire people that can be the evaluators of these of these contracts. Let's find the cheapest tech company that already is in the system so that we don't have to vet them to do the portal. And this is what we always end up with. I go back to STARS. STARS was the same situation. Let's find a cheap company that can do this. And you know what? It worked for about a year, and they had to trash it. That was a $2 million project, by the way.
STARS was an accounting project.
It was an accounting project that the state took on. And in the very same way, they wanted to do it on cheap. Guys, you get what you pay for, okay?
And in this case, they got a lot of zilch, zip, nothing.
Yeah.
But Josh,
yeah.
I mean, even the company that they hired to do the website and do the portal that handled hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documents, or thousands probably, they've got lawsuits against them all over the country.
Yeah. I counted at least 11 different states and 3 different class action lawsuits. 2 of them they've settled, another one in North Carolina right now, in which they were using that company's software and tech to for their court system, and it was, according to the lawsuit, improperly keeping people in prison, which is always nice in your court system software. It's just been, you're right, it's been one mistake after another. A lot of it can be traced back to the law and the guidelines that were put in place. You know, one that has caused a lot of problems is the fact that they had 60 days between the license deadline, or, you know, the application deadline, and when they had to issue licenses. And so in 60 days, they had to review these 90 applications that came back in, make determinations on who could do what for when, and what did they meet these guidelines? Did they meet that guideline? And all of it had to be scored and processed in that amount of time. And, oh, by the way, you can't hire one of the big four accounting firms to do it at that point because you didn't have any funding to do that. And so you had to go to the University of South Alabama or one of the other institutions in the state and get them to work with you to hire people to come in and be the graders on the cheap. And then you put them under the gun and say, you got to get it all done. We got to score it this way and that way. And then we got to collate everything. And somewhere along the way, things got screwed up in the process. Yeah, and hopefully you're right. They're now going to go back and redo it. They've got one of the accounting firms to study this and study the grades. And hopefully what they're going to do is now go back and reaward these licenses based on the proper grades as they should have been
right. scored. And that doesn't mean more lawsuits. There will be more lawsuits.
Oh, of course there will.
Be lawsuits.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of lawsuits, you know, the Alabama legislature and all its wisdom and prejudice, you know, passed a law back in 2021 to ban gender-affirming medication for transgender individuals, for children, not mm-hmm. really children, but kids, right? Well, that's been stayed here in Alabama. A court in Arkansas struck it down completely, and two other states now have stayed these laws because they've been found to, the courts, and these are Trump appointees, some of them, have found that it's unconstitutional. They shouldn't be coming between a family and the doctor, the child and the doctor, and they shouldn't be putting the doctor at risk for doing what is prescribed by the American Medical Association and the Pediatric Association.
Yes.
So anyway, and back to your point, there is a lot of self-loathing on this. But one of the reasons they've done this is they found that you can bully transgender kids. You can bully them, and they do it. You know, but a lot of sex stuff has been going on in Alabama legislature, not the kind that's normal. This is them emphasizing sex of the gay, transgender, lesbian, blah, blah, blah. So I did something that was kind of interesting. I thought, since these guys are so obsessed with sex, what is the number three most Googled sex in the United States? Anybody want to venture a guess?
Transgender,
absolutely. Transgender porn has been on the rise since 2015, and guess what lawmakers have been doing? Fighting against it and probably watching it.
Yeah, you'll notice
more
in all of the
red
studies, you'll notice in all the studies about porn and which states lead the way in watching the most porn of all different varieties, all of the red states, including Alabama, which is one of the top watchers of porn per capita in the nation.
Yeah,
we always lead the way down here. And again, I'll go back. It's a lot of self-loathing, man.
Well, you got to say either a lot of Democrats are coming in from out of state to watch it, or you got some hardcore Christian Republicans watching trans porn. Okay. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Well, we're going to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
My dog Jupiter is frightened when I climb too high, the owl said.
Check for monsters, Daddy.
I did, honey. There are no monsters. You're perfectly safe.
Protect yourself and those you love. Vaccinate now.
When I first started off, it was all about being an entrepreneur. Very quickly, it went into all the environmental impact that we're having on our world right now. We needed a technology that could do something with all the plastics that are harder to recycle. We innovated and created a technology, advanced recycling.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. Susan, Speaker Ledbetter, this last week on 4th of July, held a breakfast. It's their annual breakfast they have up in North Alabama. And he came out with kind of a surprise. During his speech to the gathered crowd, he endorsed Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth to be the next governor of Alabama. And Will is not, declared his candidacy, but it was a kind of a nice thing for Well, Edgeworth.
It was, and I'm really not surprised. I mean, everybody kind of knows that this is where we're headed, and I'm glad for it. You know, Speaker Ledbetter just got out ahead of everybody else, including Will Ainsworth. But it's kind of a foregone conclusion for us within, you know, inside baseball here, that he's probably going to be our next governor.
You know, Josh, I think, I don't think that Speaker Ledbetter was speaking out of turn at all. I think we all know that Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth will run for governor and has the best shot of anybody that we can identify. It's yeah. Whether there's a dark horse out there that we don't see is where the race will fall down.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm obviously torn politically. Ainsworth and I are not very compatible, but you know, from hairstyles, we're very close.
So, we really are.
Yeah, we are very close in hairstyles. But God help me, I like Will fine, and that will probably in no way help him. But I think that you're right. You know, looking at it, he's obviously positioned himself very, very well at this point. He's got plenty of money to run a campaign up against anybody. He has probably been the most visible of any candidate that would run for office. He has probably the most name recognition of anybody that would run for that seat. So it'll just be a matter of is there a possibility of anybody souring on him in some way, shape, or form? And can you then slide in a dark horse like a Robert Bentley into a race like that? Now, obviously, that sort of a race was very different than this one, you know. And so I think that you'll have a lot of hurdles to overcome if you're that dark horse candidate, not least of which will be the money issue. But yeah, there'll be a couple of that take it on, from the far, far extreme right that claim that they can be far more right than Will Ainsworth, which is God help them. But it's,
I think you're
right.
The problem.
Yeah. Right.
Well, and the thing that another thing he has on his side there is his likability. I mean, even with when he ran for lieutenant governor, all the stuff they threw at him, he did commercials and laughed at it and pushed it right back in their face, and people loved it. You know, so that's going to be something that and then the dark horse is going to have to overcome, and I think that's going to be hard.
The one thing about him is he's not mean.
No.
It can be direct, but he's not mean. And Alabama does not, in the last several decades, elected a mean person to be governor. Right. We usually elect folks that we think can be good executives, mm-hmm. not necessarily mean politicians. And I think
I'll say about Will as well. You know, while I have disagreed with him vehemently over a number of topics, the one thing I have appreciated about him is his willingness to discuss those topics with people.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If you call Will Ainsworth, he'll pick up the phone and have a conversation with you. May not be immediately, but at some point you and he will have a conversation about whatever it is you disagree with, and he'll explain his side. You're not going to agree with it probably when you get off the phone, but at least he is there to defend what he says, and he doesn't run from it.
Well, and Alabamians take their governor very, very seriously. They may not pay attention to reapportionment. They may not pay attention to all this other stuff, but they take their representative of governor very seriously.
Well, you know, and let's get back to how likability is a big factor. Mm-hmm. Now, the people that we think might take a shot at it is Steve Marshall, the Attorney General of Alabama. I personally would not ever vote for Steve Marshall. But some people like him. To me, he's not very likable. He grandstands a lot. I mean, he was a former Democrat. He switched over when Bentley gave him a job. And, you know, Josh, I'm sure the Democratic Party was just happy to get rid of Steve Marshall.
Yeah,
anyway.
Honestly, we would like to have somebody in office, I'll be honest. But it's, yeah, I don't know that Steve Marshall would be the guy. You're right. You're right about that, though. He is a different candidate than Will Ainsworth, and one in kind of a national mode that is not based on likability necessarily, but one that placates to a certain ideology.
Yeah, yeah. He is. While Will is certainly as conservative as they come, he's just not mean.
Yeah.
And I think if you ever watch campaigns and you look at likability, you know, people like you, they're more likely to vote for you. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. That's just how people think. I wanted to get to one thing I didn't get to before the July 4th celebration of the Declaration of Independence, is that our Declaration of Independence, as written by Thomas Jefferson and signed by our founding fathers, has become a role model or a document model for some 50 countries to establish a new government. Even Ho Chi Minh in 1947 gave a speech in which he basically quoted word for word, "All men are created equal," and the aspirations of that document, in hopes that the United States would help him rid Vietnam of the French. Well, we didn't do that, and we see how that turned out. But Josh, it's impressive that that single document from so long ago has influenced the world.
Yeah, and you know, it's not simply the document. You're right, the document is impressive, but what the document kind of brought forth and the focus of our courts that kind of came out of that, and our leadership and our government to kind of hold that line. And it hadn't been perfect, but as we've gone along the way, we see what that meant, the all men created equal. And as we started to evolve as people and, you know, and to take steps towards, you know, recognizing that all men are created equal, line in there, that's what's kind of guided us. And it's helped us, you know, the separation of church and state, everything that made it to where we had equal standing, no matter who you were, what you believed in, who you loved. That's the sort of country that we were supposed to be. And, you know, it sure would be nice if we continued to strive for that.
Susan, we certainly made some changes, but over the last decade, it seems like we've gone back 30 years.
It does. And that's very disappointing. I mean, we've gone from, you know, everyone being created equal unless you're not like me.
Yeah.
You know, that's an evolution that's come over the last decade, and it's strictly political. That's all that it is. And you got to remember, though, the old saying, you know, if every time you point a finger at somebody else, you point three fingers back at you. I wish people would remember that when they start pointing out, you know, the LGBTQ, the Black Society, you know, all this is very disappointing, but we really need to go back and take this very seriously, that all men are created equal, and women.
Yeah, well, it's evolved to mean that all individuals are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And a great country was founded on that, and it has affected people all over the world in a positive way. But we're going to have to leave it right there. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.